That's the latest news. I'm Don Gardner in New York for American Contemporary Radio. A service of ABC News.
74 degrees in about 30 seconds until 11. We're about to join the ABC network for live coverage as Gerald R. Ford, a simple, unpretentious man who never aspired to be the president, will take the oath of office and become the nation's 38th chief executive. Ford will take the oath in the Oval Office of the White House at noon Eastern time. That is 11, of course, Twin Cities time. Ford will be sworn in barely 2 hours after he said a tearful goodbye to outgoing President Richard Nixon. The president choked back tears, and many of his staff members wept openly and unafraid as they gave him a 5-minute ovation during farewell ceremonies in the East Room early this morning. There were some local ramifications of President Nixon stepping down last night. One of President Nixon's last official acts included nominations for judges. Nixon nominated New Ulm attorney Donald Alsup to succeed the late Philip Neville as U.S. District Court Judge. We will now join the ABC Radio Network in New York for live coverage of the nomination of Gerald Ford.
Up at 6 o'clock this morning and made a few business appointments. What did he do when he got to the White House?
Well, Vic, shortly after he got here, he had a meeting with Secretary of State Kissinger. We do not know exactly how long the meeting lasted. We do know, of course, that Mr. Ford has asked Kissinger to stay on as Secretary of State. Mr. Kissinger is now in the East Room, and he will be attending the swearing-in ceremony.
The Chief Justice, Warren Berger, has just arrived in the East Room. Justice Berger was on vacation in Europe yesterday, and Gerald Ford asked that he swear him in. And Berger this morning at 5 a.m. boarded a military jet transport at The Hague and was flown to Washington, arriving shortly after 9 o'clock this morning. So Berger just made it. The Constitution provides that a new president can be sworn in by any judicial officer. It did not necessarily have to be the Chief Justice, Mr. Berger, but that was Mr. Ford's personal choice. All four of the Ford children now waiting in the East Room. Mrs. Ford and the president-to-be expected to arrive in the East Room of the White House momentarily. Chief Justice Berger, wearing his judicial robes, now walking through the crowd of several hundred jam-packed into the East Room of the White House and taking his place by the side of the podium.
Vic, we understand Vice President and Mrs. Ford will be coming in the door.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Vice President of the United States and Mrs. Ford.
Applause now from the crowd of several hundred assembled as Gerald Ford and his wife, Betty, arrive in the East Room of the White House. The Vice President smiling slightly, wearing a striped tie and a dark suit. A man who, when he woke up this morning at 6 a.m., made his own breakfast before going off to be sworn in as the President of the United States. Gerald Ford and his wife now at the podium. Chief Justice Berger ready to administer the oath of office. Standing ovation now from the crowd of several hundred people assembled.
Mr. Vice President, are you prepared to take the oath of office as President of the United States?
I am, sir.
If you will raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Gerald R. Ford, do solemnly swear.
I, Gerald R. Ford, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute
the office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Chief Justice Berger's words, congratulations, Mr. President, as Gerald Ford takes the oath of office. President Ford expected to make a short address to the nation, 10 to 15 minutes in length, immediately after this ovation ceases. The four Ford children in the front row there, applauding the father. Joe Templeton, I thought I saw tears in the Ford's eyes when President and Mrs. Nixon left the White House for the last time. Here's Justice
Ladies
Berger.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
And now President Gerald Ford.
Mr. Chief Justice, my dear friends, my fellow Americans, the oath that I have taken is the same oath that was taken by George Washington and by every president under the Constitution. But I assume the presidency under extraordinary circumstances never before experienced by Americans. This is an hour of history that troubles our minds and hurts our hearts. Therefore, I feel it is my first duty to make an unprecedented compact with my countrymen. Not an inaugural address, not a fireside chat, not a campaign speech. Just a little straight talk among friends, and I intend it to be the first of many. I am acutely aware that you have not elected me as your president by your ballots. So I ask you to confirm me as your president with your prayers. And I hope that such prayers will also be the first of many. If you have not chosen me by secret ballot, neither have I gained office by any secret promises. I have not campaigned either for the presidency or the vice presidency. I have not subscribed to any partisan platform. I am indebted to no man and only to one woman, my dear wife. As I begin this very difficult job, I have not sought this enormous responsibility, but I will not shirk it. Those who nominated and confirmed me as vice president were my friends and are my friends. They were of both parties, elected by all the people and acting under the Constitution in their name. It is only fitting, then, that I should pledge to them and to you that I will be the president of all the people. Thomas Jefferson said the people are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. And down the years, Abraham Lincoln renewed this American article of faith, asking, "Is there any better way or equal hope in the world?" I intend on next Monday next to request of the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the President pro tempore of the Senate the privilege of appearing before the Congress to share with my former colleagues and with you, the American people, my views on the priority business of the nation and to solicit your views and their views. And may I say to the Speaker and the others, if I could meet with you right after these remarks, I would appreciate it. Even though this is late in an election year, there is no way we can go forward except together, and no way anybody can win except by serving the people's urgent needs. We cannot stand still or slip backwards. We must go forward now, together. To the peoples and the governments of all friendly nations, and I hope that could encompass the whole world, I pledge an uninterrupted and sincere search for peace. America will remain strong and united, but its strength will remain dedicated to the safety and sanity of the entire family of man, as well as to our own precious freedom. I believe that truth is the glue that holds government together, not only our government, but civilization itself. That bond, though stained, is unbroken at home and abroad. In all my public and private acts as your president, I expect to follow my instincts of openness and candor with full confidence that honesty is always the best policy in the end. My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over. Our Constitution works. Our great republic is a government of laws and not of men. Here, the people rule. But there is a higher power. By whatever name, we honor him, who ordains not only righteousness but love, not only justice but mercy. As we bind up the internal wounds of Watergate, more painful and more poisonous than those of foreign wars, let us restore the golden rule to our political process, and let brotherly love purge our hearts of suspicion and of hate. In the beginning, I asked you to pray for me. Before closing, I ask again your prayers for Richard Nixon and for his family. May our former president, who brought peace to millions, find it for himself. May God bless and comfort his wonderful wife and daughters, whose love and loyalty will forever be a shining legacy to all who bear the lonely burdens of the White House. I can only guess at those burdens, although I have witnessed at close hand the tragedies that befell three presidents and the lesser trials of others. With all the strength and all the good sense I have gained from life, with all the confidence of my family, my friends, and my dedicated staff impart to me, and with the goodwill of countless Americans I have encountered in recent visits to 40 states, I now solemnly reaffirm my promise I made to you last December 6th. To uphold the Constitution, to do what is right as God gives me to see the right, and to do the very best I can for America. God helping me, I will not let you down. Thank you.
Gerald R. Ford, the 38th President of the United States. This has been a special presentation of WYOO Radio News. Now 74 degrees.
Minutes past, Ford took the oath of office from Chief Justice Warren Burger. And at that very hour, the Spirit of 76, which we sometimes call Air Force One, carrying now former President Richard Nixon and his family, was airborne toward California somewhere over mid-America. My colleague Joe Templeton at the White House has now seen the official letter of Richard Nixon's resignation. Joe, I believe that was delivered officially to Secretary of State Henry Kissinger.
That's right, Vic. General Alexander Haig, President Nixon's aide, delivered the letter about 25 minutes before Vice President Ford was sworn in as president. The letter is very brief. It reads, "Dear Mr. Secretary, I hereby resign the office of President of the United States. Sincerely, Richard Nixon." And, of course, that letter went to Secretary of State Henry Kissinger.
Just that one sentence.
That's all there is. It was very brief and very short, and it was handed out to us about 20 minutes before Mr. Ford took the oath as President of the United States.
The name of Richard Nixon didn't even come up in new President Ford's inaugural address, if we can call it that, until the very end.
That's true. He did, of course, call for the prayers of the American people, and he seemed deeply moved at that particular point. His voice broke, and I noticed earlier this morning when he accompanied Mr. and Mrs. Nixon out on the South Lawn to get aboard the helicopter to fly to Andrews Air Force Base and then on to California, Vice President Ford was pretty somber. He smiled very little. He shook hands, and he appeared to be rather moved by the entire affair.
Yet, apparently, he was not present at the president's farewell address to the White House staff.
And not as far as we know. I saw several members, of course, coming out of the White House, staff members, aides, cabinet members, etc., shortly after the president left. Many of them had tears in their eyes, no smiles at all. They did not want to talk to reporters. They walked off the White House grounds, got into their cars, and then drove away.
Joe Templeton, the transition of power, which Vice President Ford promised would be smooth and continuous, has now officially taken place. But, of course, all those little legal knots have to be tied and all the little lines of power have to be continued. Do you have any idea what's on President Ford's schedule for the rest of the day?
The only thing we have, Vic, officially, is that he is to hold a cabinet meeting about 2 o'clock this afternoon. With as official as anything can be at this hour. The White House over here all morning has been in kind of a state of turmoil, as you can well imagine, with one executive going out, another coming in, and a changing of their aides and so forth. It's been kind of confusing as to who knows just what's going on. The latest word we have, though, is that President Ford will hold a meeting of his cabinet later this afternoon, and as we understand it, will ask the cabinet members to stay on, at least for the time being. Now, how slow that phase-out will be, of course, we don't know right now.
Most of the cabinet members were present in the East Room for the swearing-in.
That's true, and General Alexander Haig, of course, was there, who, as we mentioned a few moments ago, delivered the official letter of resignation, and we understand that Haig is being asked to stay on, at least temporarily during the period of transition.
Thank you, Joe Templeton. And as we heard Ford say during his address, he will meet with the leaders of Congress at this very hour, as a matter of fact, in a private meeting, and will request a chance to address a joint session of Congress early next week. So President Gerald Ford takes the oath of office at age 61, becomes the 38th president of the United States, the first president in American history who has not been elected to national office, either to the office of vice president or to the office of the presidency. Gerald Ford now taking office. And he will not operate from the White House itself, at least not instantaneously. We are told that he will use his executive office building office across the way so that Richard Nixon's personal effects can be removed from the Oval Office of the White House before Gerald Ford moves in to work in that area. I'm Vic Ratner in Washington with colleague Joe Templeton at the White House. This has been a live special report from ABC News.